Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. Alright, so let's get started this week. We've got a bunch of questions. First one's from Mikhail, who says, first of all, please keep doing your amazing work. The show is great, and there couldn't be two better folks behind the show.
Remember, I don't need my ego stroked.
Well, I don't need it, but it's always nice. And that is why it's a first question. But to his question, he says, I've got a computer set up with Windows Home Server 2011. My idea was to use this computer as a file server, media server, PC. Is there a possibility to use Windows Media Center on this OS? If yes, how? If no, okay, do you have any other ideas? With friendly greetings, Mikhail. Staying tuned every Wednesday. Yeah, so Windows Home Server wasn't built to be a media center.
It doesn't run. Unfortunately
not. Unfortunately not. We had a long discussion about this before the show, and I think we both land on, you know, if you're going to have one machine on all day, mm-hmm. it'd be nice if that one machine could do, you know, everything. Home automation, Windows Home Server, media stuff. But that's not the case. I mean, it wasn't really built for that. There are things that you can do. I found a forum thread over at We Got Served that talks about different TV tuner cards that mm-hmm. are available that worked with the old version of Windows Home Server. It's from 2009, so it's a little old now. And I also have a Microsoft support page that, among other things, mentions it's not a supported scenario, but it talks about some of the things that you can do to use a TV tuner on a Windows Home Server. But you were also saying there's things you can do to set Home Server to be your store.
Yeah, so you can have, you know, another machine in your house if, you know, I've got multiple media centers in my place as the as a tuner.
Yeah.
Now, in my particular case, I've actually just set up a Pro or an Ultimate machine as my server, and it is a media center. It's running Media Center on it. I've got it hooked up to an HD Home Run Prime 6 tuner
nice.
System, and it just records TV shows on the server until, you know, I watch them and then delete them. But what you can do is, if you don't have that and you really want to use Windows Home Server, which is, you know, perfectly valid, is take one of your tuner boxes or, you know, your Media Center box, and you can record and get your live buffer on the machine, and then afterwards set up a scheduled task to just copy the show over to the to your home server box.
Yeah.
Or you can also set up your library in Media Center to point to the remote server.
Mm-hmm.
It just has to be indexed.
Yeah.
So that's the only requirement, really. And then you can have the show record directly to the Windows Home Server.
Yeah, and then you could watch it from anywhere in your house using
as long as it's not copy protected.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have the over-the-air broadcasts, those are usually not copy protected, and they can play from any machine in your house when you have it on the home server. I suggest having it on a wired network, mm-hmm. especially if you're doing HD.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got some machines that are on 300 wireless N.
Mm-hmm.
And it works fine. You
Excellent.
Know, it's not bad at all. And I can shuttle a couple of HD movies across various rooms.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly fine.
Cool. All right, next question from Michael. He says, I use Link Shell extension to create a junction for both documents and My Pictures. While it works like a charm initially, it did not notice when I made changes within My Pictures, specifically adding a new folder of pictures. I seem to remember something from Dropbox stating that junctures and symbolic links not propagating file change notifications correctly. Restarting SkyDrive caused a complete rescan and the new files were uploaded. This isn't a problem for me as I tend to shut down my machine when not in use, but could come back to bite somebody in the backside if they're not aware of it.
This was the case when...
You're now aware of it.
Right. This was the case for from the previous show, or the one before that, where we were talking about not having to put the folders directly into the SkyDrive folder
yeah.
for it to get synced. I mean, we're looking into this particular limitation, but it might be a combination of the client that's used, so SkyDrive, Dropbox, whatever is on the machine,
mm-hmm.
And how it's integrated into the OS and what kind of notifications it is willing to propagate.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, of course, a non-standard scenario for most people. So it's one of those things. It's like, on the priority list of features, what is any given team going to try and fix, right?
Yeah.
So because this is on the extreme edge, it unfortunately tends to get a lower priority.
Yeah. Okay, next question from Brian. I can't delete SkyDrive files on my local machine without deleting them on my SkyDrive folders in the cloud. I have an SSD and hard drive space on my C drive is limited, and I want to save those documents and files in the cloud, not on my local machine. What then does SkyDrive mean?
So he installed the client version of SkyDrive on the machine. So he's using it indirectly or unknowingly as a only a sync mechanism, you know, only as a backup mechanism. In his particular case, he wants to use SkyDrive as external storage, right? So if you want to do that, then you have to uninstall the client or tell it to not sync, and then just use the web interface for SkyDrive to just drop your files on it. And then it just becomes external storage. There are some other third-party utilities that that I seem to recall that allows you to map a SkyDrive to your machine, and then you can just save directly that way. But that method is unsupported and may change at any given time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and one of the other things I wanted to mention, too, is Charles did a very cool interview with Dare from SkyDrive team. So we'll link to that here. And check that out, because it's very interesting.
Got any highlights?
No, because I haven't had time to watch it. But he was telling me about it, and it sounded very cool. So I do want to go back and watch it as soon as this week is over.
Right.
So that's going to be my weekend.
That's what our weekends are for. Right?
Yeah. from Dave, his environment, Windows 7, 64-bit, IE9. After adding a bookmark in IE9, Control-D, why does Windows 7 set all the desktop and start bar icons to a blank paper-like icon and then redraw them back to their original icon? Most of the time, the icon redraw seems almost immediate, but other times due to disk I/O, you can see which, you can see each icon being drawn one by one.
So this is because IE sends a shell change notification when the icon is pinned.
Yeah.
When you send that notification, it refreshes the machine so that new associations, the new icons are all updated in all locations. This is perfectly normal. And yes, when you have when you're disk bound, it can take time to redraw those icons. It really is just refreshing them.
Okay. Cool. Next question. While trying to install .NET FX.exe on a Windows 7 operating system, I got the following error. Error 1325, username, is not a valid short file name. How can I fix this issue so the install will go through?
It almost sounds like he's moved his folder or he's changed permissions on his folder. That's a Windows installer error.
Yeah.
What we'd have to do is look at verbose MSI logs. And if you want to get verbose MSI logs, and if you want to mail that, look up this, Windows installer. Yes, it's an odd search term, I understand, but if you go to this this page, and yes, it says for Windows XP, but it relates to all versions of Windows, you can run the fixit to do it for you, so you don't have to go to the registry yourself, but if you actually want to know what it's doing, say, you want to elevate a CMD first, before you do any of this, you want to do a netstop MSI server. Hit enter. I'm not running an elevated CMD, so it's going to fail. If you run netstop MSI server, it'll stop the Windows installer service. Set this registry key, a registry logging value voice warm up, and then do a net start MSI server to restart
and
the server.
Voice warm up is a series of switches that turn things on. It's not a word that means something.
Word.
And you can see that on this page. It'll tell you what all of them mean. But it's just an easy way to remember that.
Exactly. And then what you'll get after trying to run that is a log file in your temp directory. I have a lot of files here. It's going to be, let's see, do I have any? No, I don't. It's going to be a temp file with the pattern of MSI and then four numbers dot log.
Yeah.
Get that file, mail it, we'll take a look.
Cool. Okay. All right, next question. I have a folder containing a bunch of files, and he goes on to name the files, and then he's trying to do a Windows Explorer search on all the files, and he goes through a bunch of different combinations using the asterisk as a operator, and doesn't find one of the files. We went through one of these once before, yeah. basically, saying, what does the asterisk precisely do? Is there some documentation on this? So let's just skirt around all the different iterations that he has and talk about some of the search operators and where to find documentation on this.
Right. So we have a ton of documentation, actually, on the Windows Search Service. And the underlying feature for it is called the Advanced Query Syntax.
Yeah.
We have a couple of links on it. Here's a programmatic method of searching the Advanced Query Syntax. Here's how you can use it programmatically. And we have the search overview here that talks about how the Windows Search Service works.
This is when you started looking these up this morning, I was thinking it's another thing that I'm going to be reading this weekend, because a long time ago I took the time to go through and learn about all the operators for using search engines.
Mm-hmm.
Made all the difference in the world over the long run about how much time I spend doing a search.
Right.
If you want to find that video from Charles with DARE, it's much faster to go to Bing and type DARE, :channel9.msdn.com, because DARE is not used very often. You'll be able to find that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you had to figure out how do I spell its last name, how do I find it on that site, and then sorting through a bunch of other results that aren't relevant, do yourself a favor, learn all, and this is something I've been meaning to do for a long time, learn the Windows Explorer search operators, and you're going to save yourself some time trying to find local files.
Right.
So now my weekend's booked.
On the WindowsMicrosoft.com site, there's a bunch of different tips and tricks about finding folders, saving your searches. Something that a lot of people tend to do is the same search over and over again.
Yeah.
And you can save your searches as little snippets, so you can just double-click and it'll open a search folder. Libraries are actually implemented in a very similar fashion as search results,
mm-hmm.
as saved searches. There's just a ton, a wealth of information on how to dig in and answering a bunch of FAQs of the types of operators, the behind the scenes of how the search indexer works.
Yeah. Okay. I think I might just do I'm going to read all this for you, and then I'll do a video. And I'll tell you how to be a power user with doing local searches. I'll spend my weekend so you don't have to. All right, next question. Running Windows 7 on Dell Inspiron, everything loads as should, but every time I click on any command on any menu bar, the relevant program closes. Even AVG and the Quick Launch cannot access the menus. Program icons vanish when I click on them, and I've carried out virus checks with difficulty, and it appears clean. What say Gove?
Given the description, it's kind of difficult to understand what's going on. There could be a rogue plugin installed.
Sounds pretty bad if you can't click on a menu and the app crashes.
We could look at the event log, we could look at some crash data and figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you think that it is a virus or malware or something, you can try the live scan off of Microsoft Security Essentials.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the website and it will download a smaller package that is always up to date and will do a thorough scan of your system. If that still fails and you think that you have malware, you might have to flatten the machine. Back up whatever data that you have if you're not doing it already, flatten the machine and reinstall. It's unfortunate, but without actually debugging the problem, we can't give a good answer as to what it could possibly be, because you could be almost anything.
It could be a combination of different things, too.
Absolutely.
And that's why if I had a problem like that, I think I'd just do a restore. Not a system restore, but I'd probably just flatten the machine. I mean, it's a Dell Inspiron, so he probably has disks to get the machine back to a normal state.
I mean, basic troubleshooting questions, right? It's like, when did it first start appearing? What did you install right before then?
Yeah.
If you know when it started,
you might be able to try a system restore first to see if that fixes it.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't.
A lot of things that I like to try is like have a separate user account and see if it can repro onto the other user account.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, check to see just what you've installed, and especially driver updates for something like that, because any new drivers, you know, anything designed for Vista and higher, actually insert a user mode component, and if it's affecting all of your applications, it might be that. I can't guarantee it, because again, it's just not enough information.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. I've installed VGA port on my desktop computer that is integrated, and I also installed a video card that has VGA, HDMI, and DVI port. I connected my main monitor to the video card, and all is well. However, I have a second monitor that I connected to the VGA port on my integrated video card, the one that's on the motherboard. When I go to display properties of my PC, I can't see this second monitor. Is it possible to use a setup like this, or do I need to get a VGA to DVI converter and use the video card? Is this possible? Could it support three monitors, one VGA, one VGA integrated, and one DVI?
This is a great question, because I've literally just come across a situation like this in the past week.
Yeah.
The answer to this is maybe, but highly likely it should work.
Yeah.
If it's a newer machine, you know, anything in the past 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. you should be able to do this. But you're going to have to go into the BIOS and make sure that it's set up to say that when you have an add-in card, it doesn't disable the onboard card.
Yeah.
So there'll be something in your BIOS that talks about integrated graphics and your PCIe card, because I'm assuming it's plugged in via PCIe.
Yeah.
And you may be able to get three monitors off of it. For your integrated, you'll probably only get one, again, without knowing the motherboard details.
Yeah.
All of this is just shooting from the hip.
Mm-hmm.
But based on experience, you should be able to get at least your integrated working plus your add-in card, and your add-in card should be able to support dual monitors.
Yeah.
So if you're going to set it up this way, you'll have, you know, VGA, or if it's DVI or HDMI on board,
mm-hmm.
As one monitor, and then VGA and your DVI hopefully as the other two monitors.
And, you know, he said that his installed video card has VGA, HDMI, and DVI.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three right there. If your goal is to do three, can you not do that?
A lot of video cards, add-in cards, even though they have the three ports,
yeah.
you can't actually hook up three at the same time. It's one and then one.
Three seems to be like, you know, the bridge between two and three monitors seems to have a lot of problems in that gulf.
There is. That's not to say that this particular video card can't handle it.
Yeah.
But without knowing the actual specifics of it, I can't say. Most of the three-port cards that I've come across only support dual mon.
Yeah.
And you can choose VGA will almost always work, and then it's either DVI or HDMI that you can use.
So it probably has like one digital signal in the
exactly.
card, and only one can be used at a time. All right.
Yep.
Okay, next question. I recently upgraded my workstation to Windows 7. The first thing I noticed is when I right-click on my taskbar icons, I no longer get a contextual menu, just recent documents unpinned from taskbar and close application. An important part of my workflow is to be able to right-click on an application in the taskbar and choose an action from the plugin, allowing me to run the application as a different domain user. I see it the context menu option if I navigate to the start menu, but I'd love to have that in the taskbar. Is there a way to enable this?
So he is seeing the pinned items list.
Yeah.
Now, if you hold down Shift and right click, you actually get the old style context menu.
So it's Shift.
It's
hold
Shift.
Down Shift, right click.
Exactly.
There you go. Super simple. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And this week I picked something that Clint Ruckus on our team was drooling over. And this is the new announcement about Lenovo's X1 Carbon Ultrabooks. Very nice looking machine here.
So I've seen lots of nice looking machines. What's so special about this?
Well,
I mean, Lenovo, sure, they put out a good machine. I'm going to give them that.
First thing we notice about this is there's a different connector for the AC adapter. So it looks very different from the round ones we've seen in the past.
Great. So now you can't use any of the old AC adapters that you got lying around.
Well, let's look forward. Further in the future, you'll be able to use all the new rectangular ones.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But the big thing with this is it has the Ivy Bridge processor, which Clint seems to have Ivy Bridge stuck in his brain. He's just a complete fanatic about it. Tell us about Ivy Bridge. What does Ivy Bridge give you if you have it in your machine?
Ivy Bridge is Intel's next gen for very low power and still really good performance chips.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, we talk about low power a lot. Intel has Atom chips. You know, they've put them in laptops and ultra portables before. And I mean, generally speaking, you're pretty good on getting 10 hours.
Yeah, 10 hours is
phenomenal.
Incredible.
Right?
Yeah.
Take a guess what they're predicting here.
It'd be unfair for me to guess since I know.
Well, you know, fake guess.
Okay. 11 hours?
11 hours? How about 15 hours?
15 hours. Oh,
my gosh.
That's 2 days, and you wouldn't have to charge your laptop.
But wait, there's more.
24?
24 hours.
24 hours. That's ridiculous.
With 4G.
That's pretty nice. So this is a list of some of the other machines that they've got coming out with Ivy Bridge. X230T, tablet PC. Huge fan of the pen and the tablet PC.
You're a OneNote user, aren't you?
I am. I love using a pen. It's one of my favorite things in the entire world for using computers. So I've been I had a Motion Computing M1200 that I was using last night because I like to write so much on it. Mm-hmm. I also have an HP TC1000, an old tablet PC. I run Windows 7 on these things. The nice thing with the HP TC1000 is the pen that comes with it is incredible. It's like a Mont Blanc pen. It's really nice. And the handwriting digitizer on it is really nice. So I just love to do handwriting on that. But I want to try these. And I've never been a huge fan of Lenovo's because they have the devil's nipple in the middle of the keyboard. But I think I could probably pry that up and just, you know, dump it. One of the other new things that they're moving to on these models is they're getting rid of all the keys just stuck together. Mm-hmm. They're using what they call island keys, which means they have a faceplate that lays down. There's a cutout for each key. I think the main reason they do that is they have some that have backlit keys, and you can't really have a backlit keyboard if you don't do that method.
Right.
Some people like it, some people don't. I love it. I've got it on the HP that I'm using right here, the NV17. But yeah, I'm going to look at these machines very seriously as my next purchase.
Yeah, I mean, Ivory Bridge is a great step forward for low power, and I mean, people definitely don't like to be tethered to a power outlet.
Yeah. The other thing, too, it's got USB 3, of course, which is very nice. But also with the Ultra Portable that was at the top of the page, the reason that I don't use an Ultra Portable like this is because the screen resolution. And that's why I carry around this huge NV17, is I like to have a big resolution on my display for doing, like, video editing and stuff like that.
Right.
This one has 1600 by 900, which is very nice.
That is very nice.
For a resolution on a portable machine. So, yeah, this might just be Larry's next.
HD video look awesome on that.
That would be awesome. I can't wait. All right, that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a comment in the show notes, or you can send us an email. We like the email so we can go back and forth in the middle of the night for Gove, in the middle of the day for me. So that's the show. Thanks for watching. We'll be right back.